The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Welcome to Roto-World Football Show's Week 2 Recap Podcast. My name is Pat Corain. In just a few moments here, I'm going to be joined by everyone from the Roto-World team who blurbed the games for us today. We're going to be talking through some of the context of these games and get a sense of how players were scoring points, who looked good, who didn't look good, breakdown of backfields, breakdown of targets, etc. And also just kind of go through and take a look at some of the critical and key fantasy performances from Week 2. Let's get to the games. The Dolphins defeated the Ravens 42-38. This was the game of the day, Denny Carter. Yes. Tell us about it.
It was incredible for fantasy purposes. I mean, these defenses just had no chance at stopping one another. The Dolphins threw everything they could at Lamar Jackson. They couldn't stop him on the ground or through the air. Of course, he had Lamar Jackson had a 75-yard scamper for a touchdown in which he went almost untouched all the way to the end zone. Just all the fantasy points all the way around. Really, really great, fun game for fantasy. I will say that this is like two offenses, and you mentioned this in your writing this week, that if they keep their foot down on the pass rate over expected pedal, this could be what we see for a lot of the year. Not exactly these results, but the fact that these teams are very pass heavy, Dolphins and the Ravens, and we saw what that can bring on days like today, which is Tyreek Hill going bananas, Jalen Waddle going bananas, Rashad Bateman having a big game, Mark Andrews having a big game. So really, I mean, could be a sign of things to come for both the Miami and the Baltimore offenses.
Two things we like about this situation for both these teams. They are passing a bit more than we thought they might, and they are very concentrated offenses. We know where the targets are going to go. Let's talk about the Dolphins first. Tyreek Hill goes 11 for 190 and 2. Jalen Waddle goes 11 for 171 and 2. Mike Gesicki third on the team in receiving yards with 41. So this is about Waddle and Hill.
66% of the targets on the day went to Waddle and Hill combined. I think you can kind of ignore the Gesicki thing because, I mean, you know, four catches is fine. The touchdown is fine. But the guy saw an 8% target share. So, you know, pump the brakes on any sort of Gesicki resurrection. I will say that for a while, for the first three and a half quarters, really, it was the Jalen Waddle show where Tyreek was used primarily as a decoy in the first half, in the backfield, in the slot. They were moving him around a lot. The Ravens defense was reacting to Tyreek. And then that left Jalen Waddle open or in single coverage, and he just ate the single coverage alive throughout this game. So I was a little worried about the air yard split and the target share split between Hill and Waddle in week one, but it does look like both could be, if they're very pass heavy, both could be high end. I don't know. Both could be wide receiver ones in PPR going forward.
Yeah, both just almost went for 200 yards and scored two touchdowns. So, yeah. I mean, this is a game where Tua did throw for six touchdowns, 469 yards. I mean, he went completely nuclear. And I think there was reason to think going into this game that Baltimore would be a pass funnel. They were a massive pass funnel to close last season. They have injuries in the secondary. So, you know, I would expect this is probably the most percent of passing yards that Tua has this season. Right. That seems like a pretty safe bet. Yes. But, you know, still very exciting that this is even possible for this Miami team. What about the backfield here? Because Raheem Mostert led the team with 11 rushes, 51 yards. Chase Edmonds only had 5 carries for 33 yards. And Mostert had 3 receptions to Chase Edmonds' 1.
Right. So I don't think anybody is going to be a great fantasy option in this Dolphins backfield. But Mostert did start the game. He had all of the touches on the first 2 drives for Miami. He ran 1 fewer routes than Edmonds, which I wouldn't look too much into. A lot of Edmonds' routes came late in the game. I think Mostert may have been dinged up a little bit. You'll be shocked to hear. But it does seem like, look, Edmonds was miserable in week 1. Like truly, Hayden Winks from Underdog mentioned that per Next Gen Stats, Chase Edmonds was the worst running back in the NFL in the opening week. So perhaps the Dolphins noticed that and they said, hey, we're going to give Mostert a shot. Mostert is a veteran of this system, you know, knows it well. He's an older guy, obviously, so we don't know about the health, but I think we have to take notice that there was a bit of a takeover for Mostert in this backfield.
Yeah, that's definitely something to note. Rashad Bateman here led the way on the Ravens side with 108 yards and a touchdown. Mark Andrews not far behind with 104 yards and a touchdown. He had 11 targets to Bateman's 7 and 9 receptions to Bateman's 4. And I was seeing some stuff about Bateman not playing all the snaps. So what was going on there?
Yeah, the Bateman usage is a little iffy. I mean, he ran 22 routes on the day out of a possible 31. So it's not too bad. And obviously, like, Devin Duvernay and DeMarcus Robinson ran fewer than Bateman. But he only played 36 of 58 snaps for Baltimore. So, again, like in week 1, it worked out. You know, if you started Bateman, you're very happy about what you see in the box score because he got that long touchdown. And I'm not taking away from him because he is an explosive player. Like, he caught that ball something of a crossing route and just took it the distance and nobody could touch him. You know, it seemed like a very explosive player, as he did last week when he outran the Jets defense for a long touchdown. So these long touchdowns, I think, are going to happen for Bateman, and that's great. There will be days, though, where the 5 or 6 or 7 targets that he gets in this offense is not going to get it done. I think fantasy managers need to remain realistic about what's in store for Bateman.
Yeah, and this is the type of game environment where if he's not running all the routes, or if he's not even coming close to running all the routes, like a game they lost where the Miami stormed back and beat them, like, if he's not running all the routes here, maybe he's not a full-time player. It's a bit concerning.
Yes, I think it is concerning. And then, you know, on the other side, you have Andrews just dominating targets. Yeah, I know you highlighted him in your column this week. Thank you for doing that. You got me some monies in DFS.
So hopefully you had Miami bringbacks with them.
I had Tyreek in, and okay. For a while I was just bitter as hell about not having Waddle, but it turned out okay. So Andrews again led the team in targets. He had a quiet week 1, but you know, like last year, he went off in large part because the Baltimore defense couldn't stop anybody. And the offensive plays for the Ravens went through the roof compared to previous seasons. We could have a similar formula here.
Yeah. The backfield, I feel like there's really nothing to say. Just let's hope J.K. Dobbins gets back soon. Really gross. Lamar Jackson, though, did run for 119 yards and a touchdown, threw for 3 more with 318 yards passing. Anything to close it out here on the quarterback performances?
Tua got it done in an ugly way, I'm going to say. And I know Dolphins fans are upset with me saying that both of his long, deep shots to Tyreek Hill, which resulted in 2 touchdowns, both of them were underthrown, but they were underthrown. You know,
he's the most accurate quarterback Tyreek's ever played with.
Look, so Tyreek is so fast that it doesn't matter that they were underthrown because he could just sit there and wait for it like a punt. Okay. So, you know, hey, it works. It works.
Yeah. I mean, can't argue with the results. All right. Let's move to the Cincinnati Bengals, the 0-2 Cincinnati Bengals, shockingly defeated by Dallas at the last minute field goal. Let's start here with, I guess we should start with Dallas since they won. Thoughts on
Yeah.
Cooper Rush's debut start here as he takes over for the injured Dak Prescott.
Oh, man, it was very frustrating, I'm sure, for Cowboys fans, but also for fantasy players. Cooper Rush was good last year in his start against Minnesota. He threw for over 300 yards, a couple touchdowns. He was on his way today to having a really nice outing against the Bengals. And Kellen Moore and the Cowboys just hit the brakes as soon as they got a lead. As soon as they went up 14-3, they said, it's time to establish. And they gave it to Zeke over and over and over again. And on the time, so basically what they did is, early in the game, they're throwing on first down, they're throwing on second down. They get a lead. Now, every single first down is a run. Every second in medium is a run. And then Cooper Rush has to convert third and five over and over and over. He can't do that. So, terrible play calling. I think it could have been a great game for Cooper Rush. He averaged almost 8 yards, per attempt, 235 through the air, one touchdown. He was only sacked once and really didn't face much pressure at all. So, I think he's serviceable. I think, you're pretty happy to have him in super flex leagues going forward, I think.
Yeah, and Lamb going 7 for 75 here on 11 targets. It feels like, okay, maybe we'll get something from Lamb here.
Yeah, I mean, he was quiet. So, like, everybody was quiet. Noah Brown, who was, seemingly like the wide receiver one for a while, somehow. He finished with 5 catches for 91 yards. Like you said, you have CeeDee Lamb finishing with 7 catches for 75 yards. Both of those guys, again, could have had much bigger days if the Cowboys would have remained aggressive as they were in the first quarter. It's worth noting that CeeDee Lamb dominated targets, had 11 targets. Brown only had 5. I happened to catch all 5. Tony Pollard was actually second to Lamb with 7 targets. He caught a short little shovel early in the game and took it 46 yards down to the 1-inch line before he punched it in for a rushing score. It would have been, of course, a receiving touchdown and one that Cooper Rush would have got credit for, but not quite. I think it was pretty good usage overall for CeeDee Lamb. I do think that you're pretty much stuck with a wide receiver 2 right now.
Yeah. On the Bengals side, T. Higgins returned from his concussion to lead the way with 671 and a score. Ja'Marr Chase was held to 5 for 54. Joe Burrow overall threw for only 199 yards and 1 touchdown. I saw him take a bunch of sacks.
Yes.
Thoughts on this passing game?
It's bad. Like last week, they were very predictable, the Bengals. This week, also very predictable and stale. They just look stale. There's not much effort to like disguise what they're doing, to move guys around, to get them in favorable positions. It's just like, hey, Ja'Marr, hey, T, you go out, you get open. Okay. And that's the whole offense. And Joe Burrow.
Were both of these teams coached by Mike McCarthy?
It sounds like it, honestly. And Zach Taylor is calling plays. I wouldn't be surprised if he gives that up eventually. I mean, it's awful right now for the Bengals. And Joe Burrow's under constant duress. He sacked 6 times today against Dallas. He was sacked 5 times against Pittsburgh last week. Innumerable hits for Burrow as he drops back in obvious pass situations. It's pretty ugly. And I don't know if you can be confident in starting Burrow in 12-team leagues next week or anytime soon.
Mixon here had 57 yards on 19 carries. He did have 26 receiving yards on 3 receptions. He had 4 targets. Seems like maybe we're getting a little bit more of the receiving volume this year than at least doubters like myself thought we might. Right. But still not a great game, but any thoughts on Mixon here?
Well, yeah, I mean, last week Mixon, mixed in, I didn't mean to do that, but pretty well in the passing game. He had 7 catches on 9 targets, I believe, for 63 yards last week against the Steelers. Now, that was a little inflated by the offensive snap volume that the Bengals had in a back and forth game where they were coming back for 3 quarters. But I think it is pretty hopeful for Mixon because, as we know, Mixon is not an efficient producer. And so he's going to need all the touches he can get in this offense. And, you know, maybe he'll get it, or he'll get something close to it so he can remain in that RB1 territory.
In the Cowboys backfield, did Jerry Jones have to come down on the field to make sure that Zeke continued getting fed? Because Pollard seems to have pretty clearly outplayed him here.
It's remarkable. It's so frustrating just from a pure football fan standpoint, where you really want to see Pollard get a chance to do what he can do. And it's just the most boring up the middle stuff for Ezekiel Elliott over and over. He got 15 carries here, 53 yards. That's 3.5 yards per tote. He had one decent run, which was an 11-yard run early in the game. So he has that going for him, which is nice. But Tony Pollard, you know, Tony Pollard had 9 carries for 43 yards, almost 5 yards per carry. He had the touchdown. They let him, which is nice, I have to say. Cowboys, thank you for doing this. They let Tony Pollard have the 1-yard touchdown after he was called down at the 1-yard line after an explosive run. But yeah, no amount of wish casting is going to make this backfield flip. So we have to come to grips with that.
All right, Danny Carter, thanks so much.
Thanks.
The Giants defeated the Panthers 19-16 and are now 2-0 for the first time since 2016. Lawrence Jackson, this maybe wasn't like the most exciting win for the Giants, but hey, a win's a win.
Right. And in the NFL, they are hard to come by, and Brian Daboll mentioned that afterwards. But yeah, it's a weird 2-0. But 2-0 nonetheless. It was a very scrappy win. Defenses played well on both sides, or quarterback play was inconsistent on both sides. It was a mixture of all of that. But yeah, man, win's a win, and the Giants are 2-0.
Yeah, and if we combined both of these quarterbacks' lines together, now we would have over 300 yards and 2 touchdowns. Individually, both guys went for under 200 yards, both of them did, and each only had one passing touchdown. Let's go ahead and start with the Giants. Richie James led the way here with 5 for 51 on 6 targets. Sterling Shepard led the team with 10 targets, but only had 6 for 34. I think we should highlight the fact that there may have been a benching here with Kenny Galladay, who did not see a target. I believe only played a couple snaps. There were some stories coming out after the game that, you know, his locker was cleared out pretty quickly after the game or something. Keep an eye on that if you're listening, because it sounds like maybe like a true benching put in place here with David Sills kind of playing over him. And then I should also note Tony, Kadarius yeah. Tony was started 3 times. He only had 2 receptions, but for 0 yards.
Yeah. Very bizarre situation going on here with the Giants wide receivers. As you see, Kenny Galladay, the high-priced receiver that they signed a year ago to the big contract, now being David Sills is playing in favor of him. He ended with 4 targets, 3 catches for 37. Kadarius Toney, their first-round pick from last season. Now, he started the game, and the Giants wasted no time in getting him the ball. Now, although in his first 2 targets, he gained no yards, it made you feel like, okay, he's back. He's going to be part of the game plan. No, not even anything close. He had 1 other target. He was wide open, but Danny Dimes missed him. It was, in fact, not a dime that he threw on that play. But other than that, man, he's just not involved in Richie James is continuing to be impressive for this lackluster passing attack. And then you got the veteran Sterling Shepard, who's there. He's always around. You know, he's always going to dominate targets when he plays with 10. Didn't do much with him. There was a lot of, you know, nickeling Danny Diamond going on. In fact, Daniel Jones' first 9 completions only went for 48 yards. So, It took them a while to get going. They had to get tough yards through the air and through the ground. They only scored 1 touchdown, kicked a lot of field goals. So it was tough out there. But, yeah, definitely worth noting that Kenny Galladay might have pulled the Antonio Brown on the Giants, but I guess we'll see soon.
Yeah. Saquon Barkley here, any thoughts on him? He went 21 for 72 on the ground. Had 3 receptions for 16 yards on 4 targets. didn't get in the end zone, didn't quite have the same kind of breakaway juice this week, it seems like, and didn't have quite as much receiving volume.
Yeah, it was tough yards all day for him. It seemed like the Panthers came out. They saw that game last week, and it was like, we got to stop this guy. And it's a pretty big – it's a good bet that if you can stop Saquon Barkley, the Giants offense ain't going to do nothing. So he got tough yards. He was able to get to over 70 rushing yards because in the fourth quarter, he started, you know, getting some 6 and 7 yard runs here and there. But it was that they pretty much shut him down until the end. But he made good runs at the end of the game to kind of seal the win for him.
Let's talk about Christian McCaffrey on the other side. He had 102 yards with 6.8 yards per carry. He had 4 receptions for 26 yards. Yet I feel like the expectations for him are so high that this is going to be a game where people are going, what's wrong with Christian McCaffrey? Why isn't he scoring me the 30 fantasy points that I want?
Well, yeah, it's kind of it. What's crazy is these two offenses are very similar. And it's because of the similar production that they're getting at the quarterback position. McCaffrey was pretty much bottled up too the whole way in the running game. Fourth quarter, he exploded for a 49-yard run that helped him get over that 100 rushing yards. But, you know, other than that, he was getting yards here and there. You know, Baker Mayfield, you know, knew where to look to when he was in trouble and even still didn't get that many targets. But, you know, it was a tough day for him as well, but a tough day for him and still getting 128 yards from scrimmage is solid. Definitely wasn't a great day, but that 49-yard run definitely helped.
One thing you can say for the Panthers passing game is not much, but it is concentrated. DJ Moore had 6 targets, went 3 for 43 with a touchdown. Robbie Anderson had 5 targets, went 3 for 32. And then Christian McCaffrey had 5 targets. Shai Smith actually had 6.
Yeah.
But he only had 1 for 2. So I guess that would be a little bit of a problem if he continues to have a lot of targets and tying for the team lead. But normally we can at least count on Moore and Anderson, and Moore got in the end zone here.
Yeah. Shai Smith could have had some decent plays. He had some key drops in that game that prevented the Panthers' drives from going forward. But yeah, this is 2 games in a row where you see DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson dominating the targets. It's just really hard to make good with those targets because there's either always pressure in Baker Mayfield's face or he's throwing it behind his lineman's head or something. So it's still a work in progress with this offense. If you could see, he didn't get to 50% completion percentage on his passes. So that's something that they're going to have to correct. Luckily, DJ Moore was able to break free from a Giants DB and he was wide open for the touchdown. Like Baker Mayfield couldn't miss him. He wide open there. So we were thankful for that. If you got DJ Moore, you thankful for that. And then he had another big catch that pretty much saved him from having a real ugly day fantasy-wise.
Yeah, we are thankful for when Baker can hit the wide-open DJ Moore. thank you, Baker. But, all right, Lawrence, that'll do it. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Have a good one.
You too. The Bucs defeat the Saints 20-10. The Buccaneers getting their first win in New Orleans since 2018. Kyle Dvorak, this one didn't seem that exciting, but the Bucs do pull out the victory.
Yeah, exciting is not how I would describe this one. I mean, neither team really got much going. The Bucs just sort of slowly squeaked away, not making as many mistakes. Really, not making a ton of egregious mistakes. Where the Saints, like, were probably offensively roughly as incompetent in terms of like the median. But their bads were very bad. You know, 3 Jameis interceptions, a Chris Olave lost fumble. And when you make those kind of mistakes, your opponent can afford to put up 20 points and still win the game. So really not a great showing from either side, you know, especially the Bucs come in with a lot of receiver injuries, a lot of offensive line injuries, and that was instantly apparent.
Yeah, and the receiver injuries, we're talking about Chris Godwin. We're talking about Julio Jones. Russell Gage was kind of banged up coming into the week. Rashad Perriman was banged up coming into the week. Mike Evans was banged up coming into the week. They all played, though.
Yes.
Mike Evans did lead the way with 61 receiving yards, but didn't score, only had 3 receptions on 4 targets. Gage led – oh, actually, Scotty Miller led the receivers in targets, led the team in targets with 8. It was kind of spread. Like, I thought this might funnel to Evans with all the injuries, but it was pretty spread out.
Yeah, there's a double Lattimore effect going on with Evans, which is first that, like, Lattimore plays really well against him, and he played well against him in this game. He gets in Evans' head, he plays physical with him, and that's not something like 6'4", 200-something pound Mike Evans is probably typically used to. And the double effect was that Evans got ejected for fighting Lattimore in, I think it was the third quarter. So obviously he misses out on the end of the game, but the offense wasn't like churning while he was there. He didn't miss out on some great closing to the game. But yeah, it doesn't help. Your odds of leading your team in targets don't help when you miss part of the game. Lattimore was also ejected in the fight, though. This is on Evans. He like came from the sideline and just rammed Lattimore to the ground. Then they kind of tussled and Lattimore gets ejected for it too, which maybe he deserved it, but Evans definitely deserved more. So ugly spread out game for a team that was sort of, I think that's probably a symptom of teams that are sort of discombobulated, is you're just sort of panicking to throw it to anyone who's around. And that's how someone like Scotty Miller gets 8 targets and does like next to nothing with them, 3 for 34.
Yeah. I kind of buried the lead there with Evans getting ejected, which, yeah, as you noted, he came from the sideline. I think Lattimore was in a scuffle with like Fournette.
There was a pretty mundane scuffle as far as it wasn't an ejection level scuffle until Evans showed up. He was seemingly walking off the field, or at least off to the side. I don't know if he's walking off. It was maybe penalty worthy, but I'm not even sure about that until Evans showed up. Then it was ejection worthy.
Yeah. Leonard Fournette had a bit of a disappointing day as well. He had 2.7 yards per carry going 24 for 65 on the ground. And in the game like this, you think maybe Fournette would soak up volume with Brady not trusting his receivers, but he only had 4 targets going 2 for 9. And it's not like Rashad White was involved. He only had 2 carries for 1 yard and only 2 targets, neither of which he caught. So, the volume could have been here for Fournette in terms of him just capturing the backfield, but just wasn't a very valuable day for the backfield.
Yeah, I think that's sort of the operative point here. He out-carried Rashad White 24-2. No other running backs got any run. Giovanni Bernard left this game with an injury, but he wasn't, I assume he suffered the injury in special teams because he didn't have a touch up to that point. And Rashad White, as you noted, 2 carries, 2 targets, which he didn't catch. Outside of it being a bad fantasy day, this only reaffirms our sort of confidence in Fournette as like truly one of the league's like workhorse backs, both in the red zone in terms of his ability to draw targets. The only downside is that we thought this was such an exciting role for Fournette because he's getting all the red zone work and he's on this up-tempo pass-heavy offense that's going to get in the end zone a lot and just put up points from all distances. That's not what we've seen so far. So maybe he looks more like David Montgomery if this offense is truly as sputtering. And the offense is definitely in sort of a sputtering state right now. So you love the role for Fournette, ironically, and you don't like the offense up to this point. Obviously, that can change, and we kind of expect it to change. They have Tom Brady and, when healthy, really good receivers, but kind of do want to see it change soon.
Yeah, I think this was coming into the week. It felt like this could be kind of a low point for this offense, and so maybe they'll rebound here soon, hopefully. Let's talk about the Saints. Chris Olave, 13 targets. That's pretty nice, but as you noted, a costly fumble, went 5 for 80. Michael Thomas got in the end zone here on 9 targets, going 6 for 65 with the touchdown. Juwan Johnson got another 7 targets, going 4 for 40. Bit of a quiet day for Jarvis Landry, who only had 4 for 25 on 5 targets. And Jameis, overall, not that great of a day, 236. And a touchdown, 3 interceptions, playing, as they noted, to begin the game with some fractures in his back. Thoughts on this passing game?
Yeah, it's difficult to say with Jameis what would be, the 4 fractures in his back that supposedly couldn't have been made any worse by this game. He was wearing padding, and supposedly this is as bad as it could get. Like, it's not a risk of further injury situation. Not sure how true that is, but he did play all the way through the game. It's always difficult to tell with Jameis what would be the injury and what is his erratic play, because that's just who he is, right? He will go out in a game, and in this instance, like you said, he was just absolutely lighting up Chris Olave with targets, and he was throwing to Olave deep. and he was not coming close on these throws. And eventually, finally, he gets the one Olave throw that connects. And of course, Olave, that's the one he fumbles as he tumbles to the ground and just pops out of his hands. So, you know, I'm not a doctor. And even if I was, I wouldn't be able to talk to Jameis Winston. So I don't know what part of this was him just being Jameis, just doing the Jameis thing where he is completely erratic 1 week and then throws for 400 the next week. To me, though, he did have a very poor game, as the stats allude to. There's nothing to sort of mask behind stats here. It is simply just a very rough game from his overall accuracy perspective. Maybe it changes in the future. Like I said, he's a very high volatility player. But the good news was that if they're going to be losing games, he is going to be bombing it to Chris Olave, which is kind of the best case scenario if this offense is going to be bad. I think there will be better days ahead just by Jameis having a strong arm and now having good weapons to throw to.
Thoughts on this backfield, or are we just hoping Alvin Kamara gets back as soon as possible?
I mean, Mark Ingram ran fine, averaged 6 yards a carry, showed some good, like, short area burst. He's not, you know, obviously he's not going to be a breakaway runner, but he didn't look sluggish. He does also, we talk about the amount of mistakes this team made, a red zone fumble from him as well, but he kind of cleanly secured the starting role on an offense that maybe as they face weaker opponents than the Bucs, and specifically the Bucs defense, that things will go better. But he's, you know, what, 30-something-year-old Mark Ingram, and he's not going to get at least the entirety of the work. They gave Dwayne Washington 4 carries. They gave Tony Jones a pair of carries. So he's not that sort of Mark Ingram of old, or Latavius Murray did the same thing, where they inherited the entirety of the Alvin Kamara role. He's not going to be that, but if Alvin Kamara is out, he is going to be flex-viable-ish.
All right, let's move to the 49ers, who defeated the Seahawks 27-7. I will not bury the lead here. Trey Lance suffered a broken ankle early in this game. He's going to undergo season-ending ankle surgery.
Yeah, I mean, that's the, you know, the story of this game is just easily what, you know, the worst fear was as soon as you saw him go down is that he, I think someone tried to even help him up, and immediately he can't get up, gets in the air cast and carted off, and you know, Schefter within an hour or less even says, yep, need surgery. It's over. Garoppolo comes in, plays well. The Seahawks never threatened in this game. Their 7 points weren't even offensive points. They were a blocked field goal return for a touchdown. So you didn't really need to see much from Garoppolo for them to sort of just salt away this win. But he played fine. He actually had a nice deep throw to Ayuk that was dropped. And then sort of the Garoppolo story is kind of the same way we talk about Jameis. Very poor deep throw to Danny Gray, I believe. So up and down game from Garoppolo, but not much was needed to be asked of him. And to be fair, he, you know, hardly like practiced with the team during the summer. I know he knows the system, but I think just getting in a rhythm would have helped him throughout the summer. And he doesn't get that, comes into a game he wasn't a starter. So I think this offense, maybe not next week, maybe they still tilt toward the run as they get Jimmy up to speed. But I think it looks, and it generally tilt toward the run anyways, but I think it'll look like we've seen with Jimmy in the past. And for me, that's like all wheels up for Deebo Samuel, who didn't lead the team in targets this week, but looked as explosive as ever. And I don't think they're going to use him in the running back specific role, like the RB2 role, which to me is a good thing. Like I want Deebo to be alpha wide receiver one Deebo, not Cordarrelle Patterson, right? Cordarrelle Patterson is good, but alpha Deebo is great.
Yeah, and with Jimmy Garoppolo back there, I completely agree. I mean, I think we're going to have probably a more consistent passing offense now than we probably would have, at least over, you know, the next like 4 or 5 weeks. Lance, maybe if he had gotten a chance to kind of develop, would have turned into something down the line, but certainly looked pretty raw in the very limited snaps we got from him this season. Let me ask you about Jeff Wilson Jr. and Tyrion Davis Price. Jeff Wilson had 18 rushes going for 84 yards. TDP had 14 rushes, not too far behind, only 33 yards, 2.4 yards per carry compared to 4.7 for Wilson. So not great for Davis Price, but this is a guy who was a healthy scratch last week and he got 14 carries. So definitely a little intriguing.
Yeah, I think, you know, a decent amount of his work came towards the end of the game, but they weren't pulling the starters, right? I think they were just trying to, you know, having afforded themselves a little bit of breathing room, see what they had in Davis Price. And, you know, like you said, it was 2.4 yards per carry. He really didn't do all that much, but he did get taken down in the backfield multiple times, which there's nothing obviously he can do about. And Jeff Wilson did get good running lanes. He's also a pretty good running back, just a hard runner, hard to take down. So he made the most of his work, and it could have been a particularly good game for him. But Kyle Juszczyk gets one in the end zone, and Jimmy Garoppolo gets one. They even tried to get Kyle Juszczyk a second. He got stuck.
Yeah, I had Wilson in an important GPP lineup, so I'm familiar with the Juszczyk.
As did I have a few Wilson lineups. And that was the one thing. TDP got stuffed at the goal line as well. So they clearly seemed to favor Jeff Wilson. He got the start, and he got most of the run. TDP worked in later in the game. but throughout the game, they were giving everyone goal line work, which if that's not really the Jeff Wilson MO though. They usually do let him control that goal line work. So maybe a bit fluky there, but as always, the teams that use their fullbacks around the goal line will have some particularly frustrating weeks. I like what I saw from Jeff Wilson though. Like I think when I do my rankings next week, he'll probably come in as like a low end RB2. TDP, some flex value, especially if this team, like we expect them to be generally pretty run heavy. That's the only of the Shanahan tree that they truly do tilt toward the run.
Also seems like contingent value. Like he seems like
he'd absolutely. Be the
next. Let's go to the Seahawks here. This kind of feels like worst case scenario for the backfield now. Rashad Penny, Kenneth Walker, both healthy, both splitting an early down role. Only 10 rushes total between them, 6 for Penny, 4 for Walker. Both averaged 2.5 yards per carry. Travis Homer mixed in for 2 rushes as well. Travis Homer got 4 targets. So, yeah, we've got 2 early down only backs. And they play for the Seahawks, Kyle.
Yeah, do they play for the Seahawks. A very Seahawks game under Geno Smith, in which he has a high completion rate, goes 24 of 30, and he had a high completion rate the last week as well. And they're just stagnant on offense because really, I think his completion rate is just a product of teams saying, yeah, like, yeah, we'll give you layups because you just can't beat us only throwing layups. So to me, the offense is going just to continue sputtering. The offensive line didn't look great in this game, and it was a near 50-50 split for the backfield, less than 50-50, you know, 50-40-10 or whatever it happened to be just in the carries alone. So this was, as you said, worst case scenario. They're splitting a bad backfield. Honestly, they'll both be ranked quite low for me. You know, when at all possible, just play running backs on better teams.
I did see a pretty nice catch by DK Metcalf in this game that I believe was called back.
Brutal. It was like a 51-yard catch where he mosses the guy, right? If you don't know, you go over top of them and just secure the ball, fighting them physically. And it's what DK Metcalf does. And it was called back by holding at the line of scrimmage or something, something off like that. Something, you know, maybe not so related, at least not related to DK Metcalf.
It wasn't like it was an offensive pass interference.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I mean to say. It wasn't his fault that the holding or whatever it was came up. It was a beautiful catch. And that's what he does. He's DK Metcalf. And it's a real shame that that was the sort of one exciting play for the team that got obviously called back.
Lockett goes over 100 yards here, though, on 11 targets, 9 for 107.
I think that's almost worst case scenario too for this team, because now we're saying like this team is capping out. I think through 2 weeks, they're averaging like 196 passing yards a game, obviously a small sample, but you've got 200 passing yards to divvy up and you don't have, and this was the fear all along, a one alpha wide receiver, because Lockett is still incredibly talented. And in this game, it looked like Geno Smith was just trying to get him the ball in space, take the layups to the guy who's short, speedy, and can beat defenders. Some games, DK Metcalf will out physical cornerbacks. He'll be open, and that's who Geno will go to. But I think this is the fear all along, is that we don't know who the wide receiver one is. It's probably DK Metcalf, but in any given week, he can go out and skunk you for 4 for 35. So it's the backfield all over again.
Are you dropping Noah Fant at this point? 2 targets. Will Disley also had 2 targets.
Yeah, the distant third receiver, you know, receiving option. And third might even be generous, because Will Disley's matching him in production on an offense that I just said, like, if I don't want to play DK Metcalf on this offense, which I struggle to, I'm not playing their committee tight end.
Yeah, that seems fair. All right, Kyle Dvorak, thank you. The Lions defeated the Commanders 36-27 in a game where Amon-Ra St. Brown has now tied the NFL all-time record for eight straight games with 8+ catches. Zach Kruger, very impressive stuff here from St. Brown.
Yeah, very impressive stuff. You mentioned that he tied the record for most consecutive games with 8 straight passes, which is also 8 games. So a lot of eights involved there. But the other two names that he tied for this record, you may have heard of, one Michael Thomas and the other Antonio Brown. So it's, you know, those three elite receivers. I guess Amon-Ra St. Brown's a part of the elite now with 8 receptions. Once again this week, he actually finished the day going 9 of 12 on his targets for 116 yards and 2 touchdowns. in today's win against the Commanders. He had two plays of 40 or more yards, one of which was on a reception, and the other one was actually a 58-yard run late in the third quarter, just after Washington had scored a touchdown. It looked like they were mounting a comeback on the very first play of the Lions' next offensive possession. St. Brown broke off a 58-yard run and nearly took that one to the house. So it was a really big day for him. We'll get a little bit more into some of the other players, but you know, great record for Amon-Ra St. Brown, and what was really, I think, a great performance for this team against a Commanders team they probably should have won, at least you know, beaten. It wasn't really like it was this, you know, overmatched team from the start.
Yeah, or certainly earning the name the Sun God, which his name, I believe.
Yes.
So yeah, pretty a very fun start to the season for Amon-Ra St. Brown. Josh Reynolds, I'll note, had 3 for 38 and a touchdown. DeAndre Swift had two for 31 receiving and a touchdown on 5 targets. I believe he had a really long run, right? And then kind of the same story. He didn't get the goal line work, but then I don't believe that was punched in. What was Swift days like?
Yeah, so Swift, as we know, he was questionable heading into this week with the ankle injury. He said he was going to play. There was a little bit of a reason to doubt that throughout the week, just because he didn't really log, I don't think, any real full practices. But he did, in fact, play in this one. I would say he was limited by my accounts. He didn't lead the team in rushing attempts. That went to Jamal Williams. But Swift overall on the day, he had 10 total opportunities. He had 5 carries for 56 yards, and then he had another 2 receptions for 31 yards and a really impressive 22-yard touchdown later on the second half of this one. So he did have that 50-yard run that you mentioned that came early in the first quarter, I believe. Just once again, there was twice on the day the Lions had plays of over 50 yards. They happened to be on the ground both times. They just got run down by the defense and were able to capitalize on the score. So both St. Brown and Swift could have had bigger days in those regards. But for a guy who was supposedly playing on a bum ankle, I thought Swift looked very good. His 22-yard reception was actually a fall down on the play. He kind of dove out to catch a little bit of an errant pass from Jared Goff, hit the ground, was completely down but not touched, got back up and outran Washington's defense towards the end zone. So assuming there was no setbacks for Swift, I like him heading into next week's game against the Vikings. I thought he looked good overall.
And he's gotten some hate as kind of an in-between-the-tackles runner. That 50-yard run, I'll note, was right up the gut.
Yes, yeah, up the gut on the left side, I believe, and then he hit the sideline and was eventually, I believe, forced out of bounds by the last defender, if I remember correctly.
Any thoughts on TJ Hockenson before we move to the Commanders? 3 for 26 here on 7 targets. So he did get, you know, a decent amount of target volume, but just feels like Amon-Ra St. Brown is soaking up all the target volume here, and it's making it tough to count on anyone else.
Yeah, so the good thing with Hockenson is I would say if there's any good to take away, it's the fact that he had a 7-target day. It's back-to-back games in which he's had 7 targets. I think for a tight end position, if we assume that a few more of those are caught for a little bit bigger gains, then maybe, you know, a 7-target day, a lot of tight ends can get by on, and they'd still be worth that low-end tight end one flex spot. So I do like Hockenson from a volume standpoint, at least from what we've seen on back-to-back weeks. But to date, he has 7 receptions for 64 scoreless yards. It's not exactly what we were looking for from him. I thought in this game he looked a little bit off with Jared Goff at times. There were a couple times where they were just missed throws from Goff to Hockenson that I'm not entirely sure were necessarily Goff's fault. It just kind of looked like at times the two weren't on the same page. Hockenson had at least one drop that I'm aware of that was close to the goal line. Just close to the line of scrimmage. Goff pitched it out to him. He dropped it. It was a very uninspiring effort for a game where the Lions actually looked pretty solid on offense overall. So I'm optimistic that Hockenson is going to eventually convert some of this volume into more meaningful fantasy production, but it's going to be kind of a little scary next week to roll him out there again. I would say he's definitely a low-end tight end one just because he's had at least back-to-back 7-target games.
As I look at the Commander side of things, it just feels really spread out. We've got 28 yards on the ground for Gibson, 21 yards on 1 carry on the ground for Curtis Samuels. There just wasn't really any production in the backfield. And then as far as the receivers go, we've got Curtis Samuel, who had 7 for 78 on 9 targets, Terry McLaurin, 4 for 75 on 8, Jahan Dotson, 4 for 59 on 5 targets. Samuel and Dotson both scored. J.D. McKissic got 7 targets, going 7 for 54. Logan Thomas got targets. John Bates got targets. Antonio Gibson got targets. Dax Milne got targets. Cam Sims got 2 targets. So it's just, I don't know, like, we don't really need this, you know, with this offense, I feel like. Any thoughts on this passing game that it feels like it's going to be hard to count on guys in?
Yeah, so I think the two that we're probably going to be safest with to this point, at least early on, is going to be McLaurin and then Curtis Samuel. So Samuel has really just kind of been the guy that through the first 2 weeks, you can tell that they're willing to use him across, you know, various spots in the formation. He had another carry in this one where he ran for 21 yards. That was in the fourth quarter. Another nice run by him on what's been like his third or fourth carry this season. But he's looked good on the ground when given the chance. And then he had 9 targets and he led the team in receiving again. Just you mentioned earlier, 7 catches for 78 yards. He had a 15-yard touchdown in the third quarter. So I think Samuel is rather reliable, at least heading into next week against the Eagles. I like him a lot. And then I also do like Terry McLaurin. Obviously, we would have liked a little bit more out of him. 4 catches on 8 targets for 75 yards. He did not score in this one. But as you mentioned, Washington is really spreading the ball around a lot. And then the one thing that I thought was a little bit frustrating, just as someone who saw the way Antonio Gibson just dominated last week's game against the Jaguars, was that Washington decided to go ahead and work J.D. McKissic into the passing game more and Gibson less. McKissic saw 7 of 7 or caught 7 of 7 targets for 54 yards. And then Gibson only had 2 receptions in this one for 13 yards after having a big game last week against Jacksonville through the air. So I know that they're facing a negative game script, but I would kind of have thought that maybe after a solid game through the air that Gibson saw last week, it would have just kind of been Gibson again through the air this week against the Lions, and that was not the case because it got worked in more, which is going to be frustrating for Gibson managers who really just saw a rather pedestrian day salvaged by a touchdown.
We don't usually talk too much about defense on the podcast, but I do just want to ask you quickly about the Lions defense, because it seems like they're definitely way friskier than last year, where teams could kind of do whatever they wanted against them. Aiden Hutchinson had 3 sacks in this game. I believe there were another 2 sacks by the defense in this game. Just a pretty strong performance by the defense. Not like a shutdown performance. They did let up 27 points, but you know, maybe some steps in the right direction here.
Yeah, some steps in the right direction for sure. I don't think playing against Jalen Hurts did them any favors last week in terms of their pass rushing ability and what they may have wanted to do against a quarterback with a little less mobility. But in the first half of this one in particular, the Lions defense pretty much by all accounts shut down Carson Wentz and the Commanders. It was a 22-0 beating at halftime. The Lions were dominating in every facet of the game. Hutchinson's 3 sacks actually came all in the first half of that one. And the Lions also forced the safety of Carson Wentz in the end zone. So I thought the Lions defense overall looked really good. I think it's still somewhat a team that's a little bit devoid of talent at various areas on the defensive side of the ball. And that showed up with some of the second half efforts that Washington put forward and being able to move the ball downfield a bit more. But you know, they pinned their ears back. They got after it. Aiden Hutchinson was really impressive. He was playing the second half on mostly a bum leg, which he says is, quote, just some football stuff after the game. So it sounds like he'll be good to go for next week. But it was a really fun game to watch from the defensive side of the ball for the Lions. And then the only other thing I would add real quick is on the defensive side of the ball for Washington. The Lions put together a very impressive 9-play, 77-yard drive in the second quarter in which they did not face a third down. Jared Goff really gauged the Commanders' defense on that one, and that happened a little bit throughout, but that one really stood out to me was just Washington's inability to get after Jared Goff in the second quarter on a 77-yard drive. It'll be interesting to see how Washington matches up next week against the Eagles.
Yeah, I think they might not match up that well on defense.
you might be onto something.
All right, Zach Kruger, thank you.
All right, thanks a lot, Pat. Have a good one.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team,
and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
The Jaguars defeated the Colts 24-0. This is the eighth straight loss for the Colts in Jacksonville. They haven't won there since 2014. And Patrick Daugherty, this was the first time since week 13 of 2018 that the Colts were shut out. That was also against the Jaguars.
Oh my gosh. A lot of not same there. You know, the same meme on Twitter, a lot of not same. I have not lost eight straight games in Jacksonville, nor have I not been shut out twice by Jacksonville twice in the past 4 years. Real down bad. And yeah, I mean, one of the worst games of Matt Ryan's career. I mean, he has an alibi, of course, and Michael Pittman and Alec Pierce are out. So no real boundary presence to speak of, but you know, that doesn't explain five sacks. That doesn't explain three interceptions, two of which were just really bad throws. The third was a pass batted at the line of scrimmage. But so just not a good game from Matt Ryan. You know, easy for me to say from home, but seemingly not a good game plan. You know, you're missing Michael Pittman and you're missing Alec Pierce, and you somehow only designed nine carries for Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor only had 10 touches. They also kind of had something cooking with Nyheim Hines in the opening series. You know, the always rumored Nyheim Hines in the slot usage was looking pretty hot on the opening drive, two catches. Then he doesn't – I don't know if he caught another pass the rest of the game, something totally crazy. I think he had like three more touches the rest of the game, so he caught another pass or two. But Hines came out hot, then nothing. Nothing scripted or designed for Jonathan Taylor. You know, there's no other pass catcher produced, but what do you expect? It's Ashton Doolin. It's Mike Strachan. How do you even say
it? I think Strachan.
Strachan, that's right. They were saying it during the game, and I was like, I've never heard this name pronounced this way before. But it makes a lot more sense than what I've been saying. Nothing for Mo Alie-Cox. Nothing for Kylan Granson. Nothing for Paris Campbell. Real, real bad day for Paris Campbell. Zero catches on two targets, even though I believe he led the receiver core in both snaps and routes. So, You know, they're running low on bodies, but they did not make up for it with game planning.
Yeah, I guess the Taylor stuff, it is very perplexing. And one target going 1 for 9, 9 carries, as you mentioned. It's not like they were giving carries to anybody else. Dual 1 for 3.
And it's not like, too, he was getting brick walled. Because, you know, obviously the Jags could, like, camp out on the running game because they know Michael Pittman. They know there's no passing game threat there. But he had several big runs, angry, violent runs. He wasn't getting hit for, like, one or two gains, that type of thing. It's one of those things that I just – As a lay person, could not figure out what was going on in real time. Just what could have possibly been the reason? See, the offense was going so bad, it could have just been one of those situations like, I don't care, we just need to come out and just give Jonathan Taylor three straight carries on this series and kind of see what happens. There was just none of that.
Huh. On the other side, James Robinson got 23 carries, kind of the workload we thought we might see here for Jonathan Taylor. Thoughts on him? And he only averaged 2.8 yards per carry, but he did score. He got two targets going 2 for 14. This recovery from the Achilles tear has been pretty remarkable.
It has, but it was also pretty postseason-y, Cam Akers-y when you look at it a little more. Because, I mean, 23 carries for 64 yards, that includes his 37-yard touchdown. This is a 37-yard score, too, that was not the Colts' finest defensive moment. It was just an up-the-gut run. The C's kind of parted. They missed two tackles. You take away his touchdown, which, you know, you can't do. You don't take away a guy's best play, especially, you know, it's a touchdown. But you take away the touchdown, it was 22 carries for 27 yards. And, you know, this is a game, yeah, where they're playing with a two-score lead the entire game. Which, of course, I guess plays into it. Very predictable running situations, but he was brick-walling. Or I said Jonathan Taylor was not brick-walling. James Robinson was just brick-walling. He did out-touch Travis Etienne, though, 25-12. Etienne, it wasn't like one of those things like, well, Etienne had almost as many yards, you know, and half as many touches. He did not. He only had like 30 yards. So just not a good day for the Jags running game. But, yeah, I mean, certainly if you're a James Robinson manager, you really like the commitment because, you know, 25 touches in the second game off the torn Achilles. Commitment doesn't really get more clear than that.
Travis Etienne at least had 3 targets going 3 for 30 here. But, yeah, that does feel – kind of like worst case scenario for Travis Etienne, at least in terms of like we thought early in the season maybe this would be his backfield, and that is not the case at all.
Yeah, and is there, I mean, can you even pinpoint an area like where he has the advantage? Because it doesn't even seem like he's like the clear cut like pass catching back over James Robinson. It just seems like James Robinson kind of has the advantage in every area, and of course has a big advantage as the early down runner.
Let's talk about Christian Kirk, who had 2 touchdowns in this game, going 6 for 78 on 6 targets. Evan Engram actually led the team with 8 targets, going 7 for 46. So kind of a nice showing from the tight end there. But Kirk continues to kind of be what they were hoping he would be.
He does. And Kirk's a guy where only 6 targets, that's a number that would have been a lot higher if the Jags were playing with a 2-score lead the final 38 minutes of the game. So they just had no incentive, you know, to get the pass game pumped up. I think Trevor Lawrence went from 42 attempts in week one to only 30 on Sunday. So there could have been a lot more targets for Christian Kirk, who, yeah, I mean, he was being schemed open. He was adding a little yak, you know, 2 really nice touchdowns. I mean, frankly, I think he's underpaid. And the contract, the NFLPA is, I tweeted this, but I think they're really upset because he set the wide receiver pay scale back 5 years by taking too little money. In free agency. So yeah,
it's really flipped.
I know. So far they are really getting what they paid for with Christian Kirk, because yeah, there wasn't anyone else making plays in this pass catching group. The Evan Engram catches were nice. I mean, he only averaged 6.5 yards per catch. That did show there was some pretty nice yak from Evan Engram that did not show up in the box score. He was getting a lot of really short targets. He had a stiff arm of Stephon Gilmore, where he had it like 7 or 8 yards after the catch. You know, Zay Jones didn't do anything. The biggest play in the passing game would have been a 40-yard touchdown to Jamal Agnew, but it kind of went right through his hands. It wasn't like a straight-up drop. It would have been a difficult catch, but it was a catch that also he could have easily made. And so other guys aren't making plays, but Christian Kirk was making the plays.
So it seems like Trevor Lawrence had a pretty good game then. He went 25 of 30. He probably, like you said, would have had more passing attempts if they had needed. You know, they're shutting out the Colts on the other side, so you don't need to go to the air. 235, 2 touchdowns, and maybe another touchdown if Agnew makes the play.
Yeah, so he didn't make a ton of big plays. He wasn't quite as accurate, I would say, as 25 of 30 would indicate, but no turnovers, no sacks taken. There was also a Marvin Jones drop mixed in there. So, yeah, another game where maybe he's not, like, blowing the doors off the building yet. But back-to-back games for Trevor Lawrence definitely looks like he's beginning to move on from the Urban Meyer era.
That's nice to see. Let's go to the Cardinals, who defeated the Raiders 29-23. They came back from 20-0 to win in overtime. Should note in this game that James Conner suffered an ankle injury.
So, yeah, one of the most insane games of the year. I mean, we're in week two. But Kyler Murray, I think, had 53 yards at halftime. It was the horizontal raid, had never looked more horizontal. Just awful, awful football. I mean, awful play calling, awful execution. Kyler Murray doesn't really get a free pass for his first half. And then it revved up after halftime, even though it, in a lot of ways, it didn't rev up. They're kind of like kicking the ball around, so to speak. I mean, A.J. Green dropped a touchdown. He dropped the ball at the 1-yard line. Both of this late in regulation as they're desperately trying to tie it. They take a delay of game on a 2-point conversion. They had several other clock management issues. Just a lot of really small
Green
mistakes.
Green almost dropped the game-tying 2-point
yes,
conversion. Yes,
he did. Yeah, AJ Green was one of the classic. It was more accurate to say the 2-point conversion caught him than he caught the 2-point conversion. So like really, really sloppy Cardinals football. But they finally started making some plays. Marquise Brown honestly seemed like he was playing like a gear faster in the second half. Like he was kind of like finally playing in the rhythm of the offense. Zach Ertz was doing like the classic, like Jason Witten, where he was just moving the chains. He did have a false start. I don't know what was up with the Cardinals and clock management. That's the whole Cliff era. But he was doing like the classic Jason Witten, just move the chains. They got a big play from our guy, Greg Dortch. So it basically looked like a team that knew their season was already going to be over if they lost this game and somehow figured out a way to win the game. You know, a real boomer analysis there, but they found a way to win, folks.
Well, you know, it kind of looked to me like you know, whichever Madden game it was where Vic was just like unstoppable and you just you just sat back with Vic for like 10 seconds and then just ran once everyone was downfield. I mean, I saw Kyler Murray do that like three or four times. It was their best play.
This is not an exaggeration. So they had to get 2 2-point conversions to tie this game. The second of which was the pass to AJ Green. The first was a play. This is not a joke. 20.8 seconds. The Raiders dropped 8 or 9 people into the end zone. Kyler just kind of like danced around for a while. Eventually enough people collapsed to the middle of the field and he got the edge to run in for the 2-point conversion. And it was 20.8. That might be the longest play in football history. Like you just simply do not see that. And they still, after committing, like basically the play they called was do not let Kyler run this into the end zone. And then he still ran it into the end zone. He also did that on the game tying touchdown. It was not quite that dramatic. He ran it in the game was a testament basically to his singular playmaking ability, which is when he's healthy is, you know, as good as like Josh Allen, as good as almost anyone, as good as Josh Allen, maybe a stretch. But if you like need someone to like pull a rabbit out of their hat, Kyler Murray is as good as anyone in the league.
Also a testament to maybe like not the original play not being very good, since all of their best plays are just wait until the previous play is expired. There's nothing left to do.
Waiting for Kyler Murray hero ball and him actually doing it. Hero ball is a very, very, very tough recipe in the NFL. Because you got a lot of heroes out there on the defense willing to just knock your lights out, and they usually do. But Cliff and Kyler got away with it on Sunday.
Let's talk about the backfield because, as I mentioned, Connor hurt his ankle. We saw an even split then from Darrell Williams getting 8 carries and Eno Benjamin getting 8 carries, but Darrell got the touchdown here. And it struck me as I was watching that post-Connor, it seemed like maybe – Darrell Williams had the lead, even though Benjamin has been playing clearly behind Connor to date.
I think he did have the lead. And so Connor, yeah, it's an ankle, not a great sign if you know his injury history. If you control F ankle on James Connor's internal Roto-World page, you're going to get a lot of results. And it was also back. So they did a new tape job. They showed him trying to get loose on the sideline for a while. So like he made a real effort to get back into the game and just couldn't get back into the game. And after Connor went out, I saw someone tweet this observation. I can't remember who it was, but I thought it was pretty spot on, where it was pretty similar to the Cardinals 2021 backfield, where Darrell Williams and Eno Benjamin were kind of like almost evenly rotating snaps and plays and didn't necessarily have defined roles, but there was definitely leans, where Darrell Williams definitely had the lean on early downs. Eno Benjamin definitely had the lean on like third downs. And it would be safe, I feel like, to project that for week 3 against the Rams, if James Conner sits, which here's late Sunday night, it seems like he would have to be considered truly questionable, maybe on the wrong side of questionable. And that, yeah, Darrell Williams is going to be the guy who probably gets the first crack at those really, really valuable short yardage and goal line carries.
Any thoughts on the rest of the receivers here? You mentioned Zach Ertz kind of doing his Jason Witten thing. Marquise Brown also had 11 targets, going 6 for 68. Dortch got in the end zone, but I guess specifically on Brown, like it'd be really nice if he could emerge as a real playmaker here. It seems like maybe a step in the right direction, but he's not there yet.
Yeah, it's just frustrating. They're getting closer. They actually had a fourth and goal target kind of at like the 1 yard line where they just couldn't quite connect. And over time, Marquise Brown had like a really big gainer that was going to put them in like commanding field goal position. And he just took a massive hit and the ball got knocked out. It wasn't like a soft cough up or anything like that. It was just like a ball that basically no one could hold on to, and it would have been their longest gain of the day, I think like 30 or 35 yards. And it seemed like they had no chemistry in the first half. It just seemed like, yeah, they were both operating more in the rhythm of the offense after the break, and that maybe they are getting closer, Kyler and Hollywood.
What about on the Raiders side of the ball here? You know, Davante Adams scored a touchdown, but I believe that was very early on, and then only finished with 2 for 12 on the day. Hunter Renfrow lost a fumble in overtime, which then led to a defensive score, which ended the game. So it's kind of a tough day for the receivers, but they combined for 17 targets, Renfrow and Adams.
Yeah, it was interesting because Davante Adams' target came on the quote-unquote scripted opening series, but I think they were maybe out of script because it was like an 18-play series. And it was like a real fast, like quick out. It was from the 1 yard line. It was a 1 yard touchdown. And it seemed like people were saying he's getting locked up by Byron Murphy. I mean, I know he's a solid corner, but I don't know. I didn't know if Byron Murphy could like lock up Davante Adams. And so they took away Davante Adams, and Derek Carr compensated by, I think he has 8 targets, I think, to Hunter Renfrow, and maybe also 8 to Darren Waller. But Renfrow did not make the plays. So he had the fumble 6. It wasn't just a fumble that led to a touchdown. It was a fumble 6. And 2 or 3 plays before that, he also fumbled. So he fumbled twice in overtime. Not what you want to see if you're looking for a playmaker to step up behind Davante Adams. Also got a concussion evaluation. Darren Waller was a little more encouraging. They got him one-on-one with a linebacker in the end zone. And they were like, well, we should probably just immediately score a touchdown here. And then they did easily scored a touchdown on Ezekiel Turner. So, yeah. So Derek Carr knows there's going to be weeks where defenses sell out to stop Davante Adams. He's going to have to be able to get the ball to his number 2 and 3. He did do that. They just didn't really oblige on Sunday.
Yeah, I had it as the box score I'm looking at. Renfrow had 10 targets, Waller had 8, and Adams had 7. On the backfield, feels kind of disappointing here for Josh Jacobs. He gets 19 carries, only goes for 69 yards. It's a game, as I mentioned, that the Raiders were up 20-0 in. They were up after the Cardinals finally scored. The Raiders then kicked a field goal. So they're also up 23-7. So it's like they had a lot of positive script in this game. That 23-7 score was in the third quarter. So I don't know. I mean, like, what more can you hope for Josh Jacobs, considering Zamir White had 1 for 2, but just not a lot of production here.
Yeah, there's not more you can hope for, because teacher's pet, you know, Brandon Bolden was inactive, and he handled 20 of 22 backfield touches. And yeah, you get 70 scoreless yards. He had 2 touches from inside the 6-yard line in the very first quarter. Didn't convert the 1 from 6. Then he got a carry from the 1 and didn't convert. So you're not the kind of day that's going to make Josh McDaniels be like, oh, we got to get Josh Jacobs more work.
But they're so committed to him, I'm sure.
I know, exactly. So on a day where everything broke right for Josh Jacobs, the stats did not.
No, they did not. Anything else on this game, or should we close it out?
No, we should probably close it. The game was definitely one of those Vision Quest games. And, you know, it screwed up my entire Sunday night schedule. But it was pretty funny. It was worth sticking around for. And I thought Cliff, I mean, the Cliff firing seemed imminent. And then, again, sorry to recycle another tweet. I think Cliff decided midway through the third quarter he could not get fired because he could not handle being Nick Saban's offensive coordinator, and he needed to just win this game.
Oh, man. Well, now I'm bummed the Cardinals won. The Raiders really blew it here.
But, yeah, no, check this game out on NFL Plus if that's something you do.
All right, Patrick Daugherty, thank you.
My pleasure.
The Broncos defeat the Texans 16-9. The Broncos now held to 16 points in 2 straight games. Rivers McCown, this Nathaniel Hackett offense isn't quite clicking yet.
No, I think when you have a Andrew Beck handoff on 3rd and 1, that you can, you know, just think about that, what it means for this offense, and really come to the conclusion that this isn't going well.
How many delay of games did we have in this game? It just feels – so one of the things I saw on Twitter is that the fans were literally chanting down the play clock in this game like in an NBA game because of how bad the Broncos have been in actually just getting to the line and getting the snap off in time.
Yes, they had more than 2, more than 3, I think maybe 4 or 5, and one of them cost them the opportunity to kick a field goal early in the second quarter. So – yeah, it was this whole thing is just rough.
All right, well let's start with Courtland Sutton, because 7 for 122 yards on 11 targets. Pretty nice day for Sutton. This is with Jerry Jeudy being knocked out of this game, so targets consolidating a bit to Sutton. Thoughts on him and his pretty decent day here.
He had a touchdown catch overturned in the first quarter. He also drew a long DPI on Derek Stingley. So, I mean, they had kind of a fun battle for the first half, and then Stingley kind of fell off, and they played more zone, and Sutton was wide open for his 35-yarder, which was his longest, I think, you know, not even the Texan in his vicinity. So, looked good, obviously. Fantasy-wise, you know, if Jerry Jeudy is out, that does help him out a lot. It helps you make the case that he could be a wide receiver 1 next week.
I'll note that Albert O did not catch a ball in this game. He had two targets. Eric Saubert also had two targets, going 1 for 22. Just seems like, because you also have, you mentioned Andrew Beck getting a carry, but you know, he's kind of involved as like this H-back type. Just sort of frustrating with like the ancillary pieces being kind of spread out.
Yeah, Albert O dropped one of his targets too, so that didn't help him at all. Mm-hmm. And I think he was untargeted for the entire second half. So, yeah, I don't know who to trust in this passing game right now besides Sutton if Judy is out.
Thoughts on the backfield here? Javonte Williams had 15 for 75 rushing. Melvin Gordon had 10 for 47. So both backs ran pretty well. And then Javonte had four targets, only had 1 for 10 receiving, but did lead Melvin Gordon, who only had one target, going 1 for 6.
Yeah, pretty much more of the same from what you guys have expected for, you know, the last, you know, week one and then probably the last 5 or 6 weeks of last season, which is pretty even backfield split. Javonte looks like he's got fresher, better cuts. Doesn't see the holes quite as well as Melvin Gordon. So Melvin Gordon keeps getting carries and both backs have value.
Was this sort of like ineffectiveness from Russ here to only throw for 219 yards? He had a touchdown and interception. Only completed 14 of 31 attempts, or was like the Texans defense playing pretty well, or what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it kind of a little bit of everything. He did have a couple drops, as I said, with Alberto. He also, you know, had some plays where he would kind of stand around the pocket a little bit, like he wasn't sure where he was. it was not a great game for him. I'll tell you that much. But I think maybe kind of given the lack of targets that he had that he trusts, maybe a little bit excusable, but yeah. looking at week three, looking at the 49ers defense, looking at how Russ has played this season, I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know about QB1 here.
Yeah. Moving to the Texans side, Damian Pierce.
Our
Texans expert Rivers, who never wants to talk about the Texans.
Don't do it.
Damian Pierce had 15 carries for 69 yards, and Rex Burkhead did not have a carry in this game. So this flipped back kind of to what our pre-week one expectations were, at least for the rushing part of this backfield.
Yeah, Damian Pierce took almost all the early down snaps, as far as I could tell. Obviously had all the carries in the backfield besides the amazing third down and short Jeff Driskel plays, which I can't get enough of. but yeah, Pierce looked really good. He had a lot of tackles that he busted. He was running into a lot of guys on Denver's defense and finding ways around them for the most part. Almost no red zone work because the Texans don't really believe in that as a concept. So other than that, they'll look good.
Brandon Cooks led the team in targets with 10, going 4 for 54. Nico Collins had 9 targets in this game. Interesting to note, I think 4 for 58 for him. So, you know, Davis Mills only threw for 177 yards here. There wasn't a ton of production, but interesting that 19 targets went to Cooks and Collins. I think that's good. At least we want concentration if we're not going to have a ton of volume overall.
Yeah. The Cooks stuff was pretty usual when he found open space. I mean, he can still go get it. He did drop a ball in the end zone. So, I mean, he is the one thing holding him back from, the good fantasy week this week was himself. And then with Nico, almost, 80% of those yards came on the two catches after the Broncos actually scored a touchdown. So not really productive down and down, a very inconsistent player. But, yeah, you are looking at those 9 targets and you're like, okay, maybe this can be the start of something for the Texans with them.
All right. Anything else to note, or are we done talking to the Texans?
Man, can I just say that you should drop Brevin Jordan?
Yeah, I think that's good to know. Yeah, Brevin Jordan had 4 targets, going 2 for 3. I mean, you know, pick up Juwan Johnson or something. I think it's time to move on.
He had, I want to say, I'm looking this up before I say something incorrect, but he had 2 targets and got 5 yards in his opening game. So this is a trend now where our preseason guy has 6 targets and 8 yards. And that's what I would call hard to do.
Yeah, and Farrell Brown had 5 targets in this game, going 3 for 24. O.J. Howard had another target. So this is a you do not want tight end by committee on this team, and I think we very much have that. So I do think we can cut Brevin Jordan pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, that's probably the right move at this point.
All right, Rivers, thanks so much.
You made me watch the Texans again. How dare you?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Save big money on everything now at Menards. Make quick work of your outdoor cleaning project with Masterforce outdoor and landscaping tools. The 80-volt cordless trimmer is powerful, efficient, and hassle-free, so you spend less time working on your yard and more time enjoying the results. On sale now through May 19th. Check out our wide selection of Masterforce tools and see the rest of our deals on Menards.com.
Save big money at
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
The Jets defeated the Browns 31-30. Nick Chubb got three rushing touchdowns here, but Garrett Wilson had a second touchdown to win the game as the Jets come back. Nick Menzio, kind of an exciting game here from what I thought might be a sloggy Jets-Browns game.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like the Browns are going to win pretty easily at the end there, but the Jets with two touchdowns with less than 2 minutes to play. They had the Corey Davis long touchdown, and then they recovered the onside kick, and then Flacco marched him right down the field again, and Garrett Wilson, second touchdown of the day, 15-yarder right in the middle of the field. He looked great today. He took a lot of snaps from Braxton Berrios, who came to this with a heel injury. So they were running out Garrett Wilson, Corey Davis, and Elijah Moore as their main three wide set. So hopefully that sticks. That would be exciting. Get this from a four-man committee down to a three-man group. But, yeah, I mean, this is an exciting game. I mean, it looked like Chubb was going to will the Browns victory, but Flacco, elite, four touchdowns, baby.
Yeah, elite Joe Flacco back from the grave. Garrett Wilson, 14 targets in this game. He went 8 for 102 and two touchdowns. I mean, it seems like you can't keep this guy off the field going forward with this type of performance.
No, yeah, I saw a stat that he ran 21 of his 37 routes from the slot today, so – get him them high percentage looks in the middle. I mean, it seemed like he would be a better fit on the outside than Elijah Moore inside. I don't know if that's what they'll do going forward, and Corey Davis on the other outside spot. But I don't know. But these guys are exciting. I mean, if we can get Berrios out of the mix, I definitely like Wilson more, his stock more as like a wide receiver three coming up.
For sure. Breece Hall here and Michael Carter both had 7 carries. Hall went for 50 yards. Carter went for just 23. That's 7.1 yards per carry for Hall and 3.3 for Carter. Carter had 5 targets, though, going 5 for 27. Hall only had 1 target, but he did score a 10-yard touchdown on it.
Yeah, the interesting thing here was Ty Johnson was more involved this week. He played 13 snaps, and it was all on like third downs, passing downs, and 2-minute usage. So that could pose a problem for the Michael Carter, Breece Hall thing if Ty Johnson suddenly enters the mix now too. So, I mean, I didn't like this back for the beginning with two guys splitting stuff down the middle and a quote-unquote bad offense. Not today. They weren't bad. They scored 31 points. But, I mean, if Ty Johnson enters the mix, it's hard to trust any three of these guys even for RB3 usage, really.
That's like a legit concern. I hate to hear that as someone who does have some Jets running backs on my teams. Let's move to the other side here. Nick Chubb, as I mentioned, got 3 touchdowns. He rushed 17 times for 87 yards. He also had 3 targets, going 3 for 26 through the air. Hunt was involved, though, with 13 rushes for 58 yards and 2 targets, going 2 for 16.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are splitting stuff right down the middle per usual, like last week. Hunt had the big game last week, and now it was Chubb's turn to do multiple touchdown damage this week. So these guys are both RB2 plays every week. I mean, Chubb's got the RB1 massive upside every week, too. So, I mean, he showed it this week. I mean, these guys are going to be the backbone of this offense for the next nine games, I think. Yeah, nine more games till Deshaun Watson comes back. But, yeah, I mean, you're starting these guys every single week.
For sure. And then Amari Cooper had 10 targets in this game, going 9 for 101 and a touchdown. Donovan Peoples-Jones, only one target. So is he, you know, kind of back to being a pumpkin here?
Yeah, that one target was a sick catch on the boundary in the end zone there, but he was only get 1 foot in, kind of was juggling the ball on the out on the way down. So his touchdown didn't count. They initially called it one, but they reversed it, and then Cooper got the touchdown on the next play. So, yeah, I mean, I expect Cooper to be fed the ball from Jacoby Brissett every week. Peoples-Jones, like last week, that was pretty much a fluke, I feel like. I don't see any reason to even really roster Donovan Peoples-Jones in 12-team leagues. Yeah, that's about all I got on that.
All right, well, let's move to the Rams, who defeated the Falcons 31-27. Bit of a nail biter here for the Rams, but Cooper Kupp kept doing his thing. He now has 100 yards or more 15 times since last season.
Yeah, I mean, you could see they were trying to force Allen Robinson the ball early in the first quarter, and then like he got his touchdown in the first quarter, his 1 yard score, and then Matthew Stafford back to old reliable, just peppering Kupp with targets in the middle of the field. I mean, it's Kupp or nothing for Stafford. And then like Higbee is like his favorite check down target. And then like Robinson is just kind of left there as the third guy, it seems like right now. I think he's been out targeted 20-7 by Higbee in the first 2 weeks. And then Kupp's blown past both those guys. So only 7 targets for Robinson in 2 games. I mean, that's kind of concerning, but he did get on the board with that touchdown today. I think it's just going to be a slowly working him back into the mix here into Stafford's good graces, trying to get used to him. So I don't know. It was good to see him score, but yeah, it's kind of getting hard to fire up Robinson as anything more than a wide receiver 3 every week too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Tyler Higbee 7 for 71 on 9 targets. He always seemed, I believe he dropped a touchdown in this. He had one bounce off his hands, I think.
Yeah. And then Stafford like threw him another ball in the end zone that was easily picked off. So he's like, Higbee always gets these targets in like the money areas, but he never ever does anything with them. It's like he can't make contested catches.
He can't almost do anything, but he does get targets. So I feel like we have to, you know, in your tight end premium leagues and stuff, you know, he's at least in consideration. Darrell Henderson here had 10 rushes for 47 yards and a touchdown. Cam Akers had 15 rushes for 44 yards. They're tricking us here, Nick. Like, they gave Henderson all the work. He led in snap percentage and route percentage among running backs in week one, and then Cam Akers gets 5 more carries than him this week.
Yeah, you could kind of feel this coming during the week with McVay's quotes. Like, he was like, he kind of slammed Akers after the first game after they lost, and he's like, this guy needs to run with more urgency, needs to play better. And then he kind of like started hyping him up a little bit during the week, and you're like, oh God, this is going to happen, isn't it? Akers is going to get back in the saddle as the 1A to Henderson's 1B. And that's kind of what happened. It was just, he out-carried him, but it was Henderson played 8 more snaps and ran 11 more routes. Just Akers got 3 targets. Henderson got 0, but Henderson got the goal line look and scored the touchdown. So he definitely played better than Akers. Akers only averaged 2.9 yards per carry. I mean, this guy just does not look the same since that torn Achilles, but McVay really wants him to be that 2020 version of himself. So, I mean, he might try to will it into us, but, I mean, Henderson is definitely the guy to be playing out of his backfield, even though they're super hard to trust week to week.
What about the other backfield here? Patterson and Algier both had 10 rushes. Patterson more efficient at 41 yards, while Algier only had 30, but Algier was a healthy scratch last week. So, you know, he's active with Damian Williams now on IR, getting his debut as a rookie. What were your thoughts on this backfield?
Oh, man, this is another three-headed mess, I feel like, in a bad offense. Avery Williams played 15 snaps as well. Algier played 19. Cordarrelle Patterson played 36. Williams was taking all the two-minute usage, all the third downs and stuff. So, it sucks that Patterson's not getting any targets now with Williams soaking up all these money snaps on the passing situation. So, I mean, I called Patterson a week one sell high after his big week, and this week didn't really do anything to extinguish that idea. So I think we've kind of might have missed our window selling high on Patterson's big week one. But it's just, I can't get behind three-headed backfields and bad offenses, man.
Would you be selling low on Kyle Pitts? You had 2 for 19 here on 3 targets. So what's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, he played 57 snaps, ran the most routes on the team, ran one more route than Drake London. So he's out there a ton. He's just like, I don't know if defenses are like showing him like more attention and like it's leaving Drake London in single coverage. I don't know. But Drake London was the guy today. I mean, 12 targets, 8 catches, 86 yards and a touchdown. I think he's got 19 targets on the season so far. How many does Pitts have? Like 10, I think it is. 7 and 3 today. So, yeah, 10. I think you just have to hold on to Pitts right now and wait for the big game. I mean, you'd be selling at his absolute bottom right now.
I agree. Yeah. But this is exciting to see from London, and hopefully eventually defenses will have to start, you know, paying a little bit more attention to London, and maybe that opens up some big plays for Pitts.
Yeah, absolutely.
Any other thoughts here on this Falcons team that managed 196 passing from Marcus Mariota?
No, nothing outside of Pitts and London and CPAD. So, man, behind those guys, Zacchaeus caught a touchdown today, and Brian Edwards saw an end zone target that was easily picked off by Jalen Ramsey. So, you're not even looking at these guys in fantasy at all.
For sure. All right, Nick Menzio, appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
The Patriots defeated the Steelers 17-14. I covered this game, and this helped the Patriots avoid their first 0-2 start since 2001. So a big win here for the Patriots. It was not a particularly exciting win for the Patriots, not a particularly impressive win. Mac Jones had 252 yards passing and 1 touchdown. He connected the most with Nelson Aguilar, at least in terms of yardage, who led the team with 110 yards. He had 6 targets, caught all 6 of them. Aguilar had a really nice catch. It was, I think, more on Aguilar in terms of the playmaking than a good throw from Mac Jones. He had a 44-yard touchdown, Aguilar did, that he came up over kind of the back of the defender, kind of jumped up, grabbed the ball, able to spin around and make his way into the end zone. Really nice play. It wasn't necessarily a bad throw by Jones, but, credit to Aguilar there. Jacoby Myers had 13 targets, which led the team. After Aguilar's 6, no other Patriot had more than 3. So those 13 targets for Jacoby Myers, I mean, he really was the main guy that Mac Jones was looking to, but in kind of like a move the chains, move the sticks type of way. I believe he had 3 for 26 on the opening drive. He's just kind of like that safety blanket type. And we know what Jacoby Myers is. You know, he gets open, but he has kind of a very specific, somewhat low upside role in the offense, and he was very much that guy again this week. Not a ton else to note. Kendrick Bourne had 3 targets, went 2 for 16. I don't think you're not going down into the ancillary pieces here. If anything, you're kind of starting Jacoby Myers as like a flex that you feel confident will get you something. Even Aguilar, I think, is not really that fantasy relevant. In the backfield, Damian Harris did get in the end zone. He had 3 straight touches. From the 10-yard line, he got the carry, took him a few yards. Then he got a target, which he caught and took down to the 2-yard line. Then he punched it in on another carry. So I think very encouraging for Damian Harris that he got used like that. Also encouraging that one of those was a reception. So, you know, pretty solid from Damian Harris today. He had 2 targets, and Ramondre Stevenson had 2 targets. So Damian Harris, you know, kind of holding his own in the passing game compared to Stevenson. Harris went 2 for 16 through the air. Stevenson only one for four. And Stevenson had 9 for 47 rushing. What I will note regarding these two is that Stevenson did have 25 routes in this game. Harris only had 10. So I think that, you know, the targets probably overstate how close Harris is to Stevenson. It seemed like Stevenson really did kind of have that pass catching role. The targets didn't come today, but if he continues to have this role with Montgomery out, then, you know, he should have a little bit more fantasy value as a pass catcher. But it definitely was not that encouraging of a game for Stevenson. Pierre Strong had only three snaps in this game as the running back three. So it was nice to see that this was split just between Harris and Stevenson. I think that should make us feel a little bit more bullish about Harris and Stevenson both moving forward. You're probably like kind of banking on a touchdown with these guys, but you know, at least it's just a two-way split. At least it'll hopefully stay that way. On the Steelers side of the ball, Deontay Johnson's awesome. I mean, that's the biggest takeaway here. He's constantly making these incredible grabs that really, like, Trubisky is making. It's making is like so much harder than it really has to be. But Deontay Johnson is just like, he's still delivering. So, you know, he's made these great sideline grabs, got a 2-point conversion here. And yeah, I mean, he only had 6 for 57 on 10 targets, not like a big game, but that 6 for 57 that led the Steelers in receptions, that led them in receiving yards. 57 yards was the team lead. He didn't score. Pat Freiermuth scored the only receiving touchdown, just kind of like a crossing over the middle type route that, you know, he was open on and Trubisky hit him. I think it was not even quite in stride. I think he was a little bit behind on the throw, but you know, Freiermuth solid 7 targets. Chase Claypool had 6 targets here, going 4 for 26. George Pickens had 3 targets, going 1 for 23. So it's kind of spread out in general, but especially behind Johnson, which is not ideal because Mitch Trubisky only threw for 168 yards. And, you know, one thing with Claypool is he didn't get a carry in this game. So before, when he was like having this hybrid role in week one, it's like, well, maybe that will help with what's going to be a very unproductive passing game in most weeks. He doesn't get any carries here. So that's a problem for Claypool. It's starting to feel like really Johnson's the only guy we can trust right now. And then you look at Najee Harris, he had 15 carries, going for 49 yards. He had 6 targets, which he took 5 for 40. But I mean, Harris just kind of, he'll get to the outside and he'll convert a third down, like a 3rd and 2. But it's like, it's so much kind of like he'll bulldoze a guy to get those 2 yards. But, you know, this is a carry that he's already bounced out. And that's sort of like his big play. Like he gets to the outside just to smash a cornerback for 2 or 3 yards. We're just not seeing that much playmaking from Najee Harris, which has been the issue with him since he's entered the league, and it was the issue with him at Alabama. So it's definitely concerning. And, you know, I'm sure if he had a different quarterback and a more potent offense, it would be less of a concern. But he doesn't right now, and I don't know when we're going to see Kenny Pickett. But until we do, it's hard to imagine this offense really having, like, a ton going on. I think they need a spark here from their quarterback, Mitch Trubisky, kind of playing. Just like, I mean, he's not playing terribly, but it's just kind of holding the offense back, I think. But yeah, Harris, his long rush for the day was 8. Jaylen Warren actually had 4 carries for 15 yards, and he had 1 target and 1 reception. So it wasn't quite the, like, you know, complete Najee Harris show. He had 42 snaps to Jaylen Warren's 17. So Warren actually did have like a little bit of involvement here, more than we're kind of used to, which probably relates to Harris, you know, having dealt with this Lisfranc issue in training camp and also, you know, having that ankle injury scare last week. So would imagine that Harris's snaps kind of trend back up, and they'll certainly need to unless we get a change of quarterback, which would hopefully add a little bit more potency to this offense. For now, Deontay Johnson is going to keep getting open and I think worth keeping your lineups. But yeah, I mean, you know, George Pickens, 36 routes here to Deontay Johnson's 38. Chase Claypool also ran 38. So these guys are out there. But, you know, with things being spread out, with Freiermuth earning a little bit of volume, can't really trust any Steelers other than Deontay Johnson and Najee Harris. But that will do it for the Week 2 recap show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. I'm excited to recap Week 3 for you guys next Sunday night. Join us then.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.